WPGRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello again, Irish fans. This is Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame football from a fan's perspective. I'm Mike Sullivan, and joining me today, my brother Ed Sullivan. Also joining us, Mike Brammer, and from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. We're going to take about 15 minutes and continue to talk about the implications of Notre Dame's win over UCLA. Does this represent a real turning point? Has Charlie got this thing going in the right direction? Or maybe we simply were opportunistic and took advantage of a bad performance by UCLA. We'll also talk a little bit about just kind of what a crazy season this has been in college football. Let's first start with the issue of, you know, was this real improvement and does this signify maybe season's going in the right direction? Ed, give me your thoughts on that. Were we lucky or real improvement?
Well, I don't like to have to choose between the two. Sometimes your improvement generates some luck. There's no question that we were benefit of some breaks that went our way, but that's going to happen during the course of the season. Certainly a bunch of them went against us in the first few games. There was real improvement.
Well, you know, I'm not sure you could – I agree there was some improvement. I don't know that breaks went against us in the first five games. We just were completely outclassed by everybody. But I agree. I saw improvement as well. Bram, what areas – if you saw improvement, in what areas specifically – would you point to and say, hey, there's progress in an area of the football team that we needed it?
Well, I'm on the defensive side of the ball, I like the way that we've kind of mixed up a bit, going for, you know, 3-4, 4-4, 4-3. And I don't know. I mean, you can point to a lot of different things about that, that maybe it's not big of a change, but clearly on the defensive side of the ball, I thought we played, even when Olsen was in there, I mean, it's not like he was tearing it up prior to him getting hurt. So, you know, you got to think that just overall psyche of the team is way up over what it was second half of the Purdue game. I mean, you have to think that things started to change then.
You see improvement in the psyche and the overall play of the defense. Mike Coffey, your take on that, would you concur with that or add something to it?
I would definitely agree. I think two issues. One, I recall Corwin Brown being quoted, it might have been after the game or it might have been slightly before it, that part of the issue at the beginning of the season was the guys were still learning the 3-4 and how it works, so they had to stay in the base defense a little bit more often. Now that they've grasped the maybe a few more of the intricacies, they can throw a few wrinkles out there more easily, especially with the younger guys, which is certainly a plus. And obviously, we got a little bit of a break with them starting a redshirt freshman, or having to play a redshirt freshman when Olsen got hurt. But let's remember, their offensive line is stacked with juniors, seniors, and fifth years. The tailback was a senior. Their wideouts are upperclassmen. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden they got real young. This guy was their Pat Dillingham, and we didn't get any slack when we had to play Dillingham. So I
did
see
you
no
have
reason to
did you have to bring that up? That was into the BC week here to bring up invoke Pat Dillingham's name. I don't know if that's good juju or bad juju, but yeah, you know, obviously they that quarterback was put in a tough spot, and we took advantage of that opportunity. You know, to your point about learning the intricacies of the defense, I would say also that Corwin Brown and the staff are also learning their personnel with these young guys. Like you see a Kerry Neal and a Brian Smith. I think they're starting to learn what these guys can do and how to use them situationally to take advantage of the talent that we do have. And I think that's you are seeing the progress on the defense. The one area I'll throw this out there for Ed to comment on. What did you think about our tackling? I thought our tackling early in the game, especially, was not very good.
Yeah, I think that's been a problem all season, and it's really surprising. We're getting people who are getting arm tackles, and it doesn't bring people down. We've played against good backs. That doesn't bring people down. So we continue to see some bad tackling. Even late in the game, in fact, it was the touchdown called back, there was some horrible tackling that went on in that. And so we still have much need of there's plenty of room to improve with this defense. I know everyone thinks that we had a great defensive performance, and that helped us, and we made plays, and that's great. There's a lot of room to go.
Brammer, in terms of the defense's overall performance, I thought a couple guys that really stand out, and you know, Trevor Lawrence has played great all season long. You know, Maurice Crome obviously won Player of the Week, Defensive Player of the Week, but Trevor Lawrence has been outstanding all year long. And I thought Pat Kuntz began to really become a presence and a force on the defensive line.
Yeah, they did. I think the good thing about Trevor is he's going to bring attention to him. So anytime you line up against Notre Dame, you really worry about one guy, and which, you know, that's going to draw double teams. That's going to draw attention, which you would hope would free up Maurice Crome to get wide open looks. And he did. I mean, you got to give him credit. He had a heck of a ball game.
Mike Coffey, give me some feedback on what you see in the secondary. Here's a guy, I'll throw a name out there, a guy who I really like what he's done so far is David Bruton. Give me your overall take on where we're at halfway through the season in terms of the play of the secondary.
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of, with the base defense, the younger guys are starting to make their mark, or the guys maybe who haven't been counted on in past season. Bruton would be one of them. He has really kind of stepped in the breach and said, okay, I'm going to make a difference back here. And especially when you have players like Walls who are talented cover guys, but we've been talking about bad tackling. I mean, his tackling definitely is something to be desired. But the more confidence you can give the front seven that the back guys are going to do everything they can, keep the ball in the quarterback's hands, the better off you're going to be. Now, I still don't think we have the raw talent in the front seven to get the pressure on the quarterback consistently. Once we get that, these guys in the backfield who are playing well now are going to be playing even better. The pressure on the quarterback is going to force the quarterback to make bad throws, bad reads, and we're going to have
a huge part of the overall play of the secondary is whether or not you get any pressure, and we clearly saw that against UCLA. You know, as you look at the personnel in the secondary, did you guys notice Munir Prince was getting some playing time late in the game? And a guy who you didn't see, I didn't see Leo Farine out there. I'm wondering if Prince now has passed Farine in the depth chart. Was Farine a little banged up? We don't know about it. I'm curious if you guys had any information on that.
No, as far as I know, Leo's healthy. And, you know, it's a shame. I've met the kid on a number of occasions. He's a great kid, and he and his family represent Notre Dame really well. And he's the kind of kid you really want to see him succeed, but he's just been so – had a lot of bad luck with injuries. And then when he does get the opportunities, he's not reaching out and grabbing them. So, but, you know, on the flip side of that, Munir Prince has been given an opportunity, and he seemed to really take advantage of it yesterday. So we'll have to see, or Saturday rather. So we'll see if that results in more time for him against BC, who certainly knows how to throw the ball.
Yeah, and Prince, and he is an unbelievably fast athlete. I mean, there's not a lot of speed on the team better than Munir Prince. So, I mean, if you can find a spot on the football field for that kid, I think you got to play him.
I tell you what's going to be interesting is, you know, one of the top recruits in this freshman class who's injured right now is Gary Gray, the cornerback. And, you know, he's essentially going to miss the entire season. So you add him into essentially what becomes next year's freshman class, incoming freshman class, and that's a really impressive group of people defensively when you throw Gary Gray into the mix. So I think we're seeing improvement. Corwin Brown's defense is starting to play better, albeit against a, you know, ineffective UCLA offense. But I think we're beginning to see that the point of the season where young guys can – you can expect them to play at a higher level and make a difference. And I also thought it was great to see sophomore Torrin Smith in there making a play. And, man, he's a big kid. He delivers a blow, too, when he hits him. So I thought those were all positive things to see with the defense. Offensively, I don't think we can look to much improvement. But if you had to come up with one area of improvement for the offense in Saturday's win, what would it be?
We kicked two field goals successfully, including a 48-yarder, and that's not a small thing.
The offense. I know the special team offense put the special teams in a position to kick that 48-yard field goal, but just in terms of the offense.
Well, I'll say this: one of the things we had, and I think we talked about this a little bit last time. We actually drove the ball, even though we may have ended up punting. We were able to have a little ball control at times, and I think that helped the defense. So stringing some plays together, and that I was really very happy to see that some continuity, multiple plays without shooting ourselves in the foot.
I would point to some of those things too. Brammer, what areas of improvement did you like on the offensive side of things?
Well, I think what we're seeing is that Jimmy's really coming of age, so much so that we may have to stop calling him Jimmy by the end of the season. It may be Jim Clausen, but you know, it's a tough situation for a true freshman to be in. I mean, think of what he has to go up against. He knows that our offense is not very good, which puts even more pressure on him to not.
Well, pressure on himself. I mean, if the offense is not very good, it's because he's not making plays.
No, but that's my point. It isn't him. The reason we're not that good offensively has nothing to do with who's behind the center. Now, granted, it's not.
You got to be kidding me.
Based on the way he's played, I mean, you really think that if we had Brady Quinn back there, that our offense would be much better?
Yes. Yes.
Why? Because he can avoid the rush better than Jimmy? Because
there'd be more versatility. He'd be able to make quicker reads. He'd be able to check off to things. He'd find the receivers on the blitz right away.
Do you really want to go on record as saying there's really not much difference in our performance between a true freshman and a first-round draft pick?
No. My point is there's a lot of other problems. We don't have Stovall or Samardzija to throw to, which Brady did. He had the luxury of that. He had a guy in Carlson that could go out because he didn't need to stay in a block last year. My point is that the point I'm trying to make is that Jimmy has had to deal with the situation where we can't afford to have him make any kind of mistakes, which is what a freshman normally does. And I thought that in that game he did just what he had to do, which was avoid any interceptions, avoid fumbling, avoid throwing into coverage.
My coffee.
The reason, though, I think we're seeing such a conservative offense, I think Charlie's gone in the last couple of games to really a max protect scheme where he's keeping tight ends in to block and keeping running backs out to block. But as a result, you don't have as many guys out in the pattern. So part of what we're seeing in the low offensive turnout is when Jim's back there trying to throw. Now, granted, he's got much more time to throw than he did earlier in the year. That's because he's got more guys blocking for him. That's fewer guys out in the pattern. And I think that even if you put Brady Quinn back there, based on the issues that the offensive line had, I think he'd probably have at least similar problems because he wouldn't have four or five targets out there to throw to. He'd have two, maybe even in some cases one, and it's kind of hard to throw against that no matter how good you are, quarterback.
I agree with you guys that we definitely are playing a conservative game plan in these last couple, well, particularly against UCLA, to try to minimize the exposure to the quarterback. Great move on the road, somewhat hostile environment against a really good defense. That was a great move. I would expect that we get back to more of an attacking offensive philosophy like we did against Purdue in this upcoming week. But I will only go so far with that point in the comparisons with, well, would Brady Quinn be struggling right now too? And, you know, there's just a world of difference. There may be five or six plays during the course of the game where Quinn's quick decision-making ability and overall understanding of getting us in and out of the right play compared to a freshman's will make the difference in keeping a drive alive or maintaining some offensive continuity. And I think those are the differences that – it's going to be hard for us as a fans to see that, but you just can't tell me that the difference between Quinn and Jimmy Clausen as a freshman aren't that significant to the overall performance of the team. I think they are. And I guess I get the last word on that topic because we're moving to a next topic, which is just kind of overall, this has been a crazy year in college football so far. Not only, certainly Notre Dame's 0-5 start, adding to sort of this surreal nature of college football, but Michigan getting beat by Appalachian State. A lot of mid-majors beating BCS conference schools. And you just look at the top 25, and it's sprinkled with, you know, the teams that aren't necessarily traditional powers. Ed, what's going on in the world?
Oh, it's nuts. I mean, anytime you look at the AP Top 25 and you see South Florida at number 5, I mean, you know, BC at number 4 is all astounding enough, but there's South Florida sitting there at number 5, you've got Hawaii and Kentucky in the top 25. You got Kansas at 20. I think one of the things you're seeing it's crazy. And one of the reasons you're seeing this is that there's a greater parity in college football, the limitations on scholarship, the fact that so many more teams are exposed through television everywhere all the time. Everybody's on TV. You have games on Wednesday nights, Thursday nights, Friday nights. And so you have this sort of explosion of teams that previously didn't have access to, I think, some real talent out there.
I think that's one of the things that can happen, a change in college football. It's a lot like the NFL nowadays, it seems, where teams can burst onto the scene and go from, you know, mediocre or last to being contenders fairly quickly. Maybe it's because junior college transfers, but I agree your point about parity. There's just so many more kids considering different options than 20 years ago.
I think also, like, recruiting has been so professionalized that there's kids who before may not have been found. Now a South Florida or a Hawaii or somebody, they go and they say, hey, I've got something valuable to give this kid. I'm going to professionalize my recruiting. I'm going to find more kids. And those kids are being developed by personal trainers. They're investing a lot in preparing to try and get recruited because they know it means a free college education.
Is this good for the traditional powers? Is this, you know, is this the kind of thing that makes it harder for Notre Dame to get back on top and stay there? It seems to me like it's harder for teams to stay on top a little bit more.
It probably is a little more difficult, but I think when you're talking about the professionalization of recruiting, I think that's come into it a little bit. But I think another part of it is you go to some of the southern states, Florida especially, you can put together a really good team based on, like, the fifth string at some of these high schools because these kids, they spend all year working on their game. The weather's gorgeous. They can play outside as much as they want. Football's almost becoming like baseball in that way, where you can get a school like South Florida who's pretty much getting the – I don't want to use the word cast-offs, but the people that the upper echelon schools aren't necessarily looking at and doing well with them, I think you're also seeing the results of maybe some of the upper-level Florida schools being in a slump. Florida State has been kind of down relatively to the period that preceded for the last 3 or 4 years. They're not necessarily always skimming off the cream of the crop. You may only need to talk one or two, like that one excellent wideout or that really fast running back who is already in school in Tampa, while USF can just say, hey, we're right down the street. You don't have to go anywhere. You can play a decent schedule. We're in a good conference. We can get you on TV. Why go to Nebraska or to Michigan or to Notre Dame? You can stay here and get all the things.
I think the explosion of media coverage is a huge point. Although I did note, even a school like UCLA, I noted in their press release from last week that they were highlighting how many of their games this year and over the last couple of years have been carried live on TV. So although there's certainly tons of media coverage, I think we still are spoiled in all of our games being on national TV, and you got a school like UCLA who is promoting the fact that so many of their games are on live TV, you know, not even national TV, but live TV. So there still is a disparity in the media coverage, but it is so much more prevalent than it has been that, you know, everybody's getting their day in the sun to a little bit, and I think that's why you see so much parity, because kids have so many more choices about where to go. We're out of time for today. We'll be back in a couple days on Thursday with a preview of the Boston College matchup. If you have any questions or comments, go to our website, domeanddomer.com, and you can post them there, or you can send us an email, info@domeanddomer. For Mike Brammer, Mike Coffey, and Ed Sullivan, I'm Mike Sullivan. We'll see you next time on Dome and Domer.